You are Locked On MLB, your daily podcast on Major League Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On MLB. It is Thursday. I actually have the day right this time. If you've been listening, you've probably noticed that usually I feel like it's Wednesdays that I call Tuesdays and mix it all up. But today is Thursday, May 10th, and this is Locked On MLB. I am Tommy Stokey. This is your daily podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, covering Major League Baseball. Today, all we have is an interview. It's 20-25 minutes or so. Really good stuff with Pat Zajac. He is our host of Locked On Angels. He's been doing a really good job over there covering the Angels. I don't necessarily, for lack of a better term, care about the Angels or follow the Angels, but I love checking in on his podcast to find out what's going on with them, get some insight, because if you haven't noticed, they are 22-14 and only a half game back of the Astros in the AL West. So they've got plenty of good storylines this year, whether it's Shohei Ohtani, Albert Pujols getting 3,000 hits and other milestones, or Mike Trout continuing to be the best player in the world. Unless you are looking for page views and want to tell us that somebody else is as good as him, which Pat and I discussed. So we talked quite a bit about the Angels, and the part that I really wanted to get out of this interview, and I think I did and got some really good insight from Pat, on the national scene, we see Mike Trout as, you know, always the big Philly guy, the New Jersey guy. He's leaving in 3 years. There's not enough talent around him. Why would he stay? We look at him and say he's not marketed enough in LA's second city for their second team below the Dodgers. They're not doing enough, so he's going to leave. But do Angels fans think that? And that's what I wanted to get into with Pat, and we discussed some of that, and I think he made some really good points that when you think about Mike Trout and MLB doesn't market him enough, there's another side to that conversation, and that's that Mike Trout doesn't want to be all that. Mike Trout wants to be a baseball player. He wants to be the best baseball player. He wants to win and do all that. He doesn't want to be the guy on every commercial. And so what is MLB supposed to do if that's not what Mike Trout wants? So we talked about that. We talked about some of the new guys, Zach Cozart, Ian Kinsler, two new additions. Those are the guys they got instead of Mike Moustakas. Was that a mistake? We talk about Cole Calhoun and his slow start, a guy that's owed $8.5 million this year, $10.5 next year, plus a club option, but he is not hitting. So what do you do with him? We talk about Albert Pujols and the problems that might arise if he continues to struggle, and how do Angels fans view Albert Pujols in that 3,000th hit? Do that, you know, with that big contract that he hasn't really lived up to, and as he gets older, what do Angels fans think of Albert Pujols? We talk Shohei Ohtani and his impressions so far, his impact on the rotation moving forward, and we talk about those rotation question marks, the bullpen, which is the bigger concern. And we also get into a little bit on Mike Socha. How has he dealt with the team so far, specifically Ohtani, and the way that he's handled him? A lot of people came down on Mike Socha before the year when Ohtani signed with the Angels to say, geez, name a manager you wouldn't want in charge of a Swiss Army knife like Ohtani, and that would be Mike Socha. Is that really fair, and how has he done with that? So with all that being said, let's get to Pat Zajac of Locked On Angels. All right, I'm now joined by Pat Zajac, our host of Locked On Angels. It's one of our fastest-growing shows so far, which has been awesome, and the Angels are maybe not surprisingly, but maybe a little surprisingly, interesting team so far. So, Pat, there's been a lot of storylines with the Angels. Ohtani, Pujols 3,000, Mike Trout being Mike Trout. They're 22-14. As of today, May 9th, what is your biggest storyline of the year for the Angels?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an exciting time to be an Angels fan so far to start 2018. Off to one of the better starts, certainly in the last 4 or 5 years. Angels are notorious for starting out of the gate slowly. Mike Trout has been, as you said, he's been absolutely phenomenal, looking like he's on pace for his best statistical season. The story of Albert Pujols hitting his 3,000th hit of the year, but the story's got to be Shohei Ohtani to this point. And I feel like if it's even possible that the hype has sort of worn off on Shohei Ohtani, because now we sort of have come to expect this sort of production from him, given the hot start that he's been off to. And I tried to keep my expectations fairly reasonable with the guy trying to attempt something that literally no one has attempted really in our lifetime at the major league level. But the dude at the plate in 65 plate appearances now, hitting .333 with 4 home runs, notable home runs off of, you know, former Cy Young Award winners like Corey Kluber. And on the mound, he has had starts where he has absolutely dazzled crowds that have watched him. I was lucky enough to be in attendance for the most recent Seattle series where he pitched. And the swings that Shohei Ohtani generates with his type of stuff, especially now that the slider has been on for him as of late, and that splitter, that devastating 90-mile-an-hour splitter with about a good foot and a half to 2 feet of drop, he has been everything as advertised, and if possible, has taken some of the headlines away from Mike Trout, who is off to, again, another otherworldly start. But the start of Shohei Ohtani, especially with the backlash that he got after a rough spring training, and maybe deservedly so or not, I'd try not to get too much into spring training statistics, but Shohei Ohtani has been every bit as advertised, if not more so, so far just a month and a half into the season.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about it, but as you were answering that question, I was thinking about, yeah, it feels like some of the shine has worn off, where we're not getting live at-bat updates when he gets a single or a double or gets on base. It's not like trending on Twitter. So I guess it's a good thing, because we've come to expect it from him. And I think some of the, you know, the start where he got rocked against Boston, I think, wore some of that mystique off. But I mean, he's still really good, and people forget that he's, you know, it cost him like $2 million, and so any team obviously would have done that. The thing with the pitching once a week, I think that hurts some of his attention, because we're not seeing him with those two start outings. But what do you make of the once a week thing, and how the Angels rotation has dealt with it, and do you see any problems that it could potentially cause down the road? I know some people have brought up the playoffs, like he's not going to be some horse like Bumgarner that you throw out on 3 days rest, but is there anywhere that this could cause a problem down the road for the Angels rotation?
I don't see it as of right now, and there's already talks of Shohei Ohtani potentially already moving towards, you know, being a guy that starts more so than once a week, every 5 days, as everyone else, pretty much everyone else in Major League Baseball. So there's already talks of moving it up once he gets a few more innings under his belt and seeing how that goes. The thing with the Angels rotation is you don't really have that ace guy. You don't have that true number one. You don't have that Clayton Kershaw, that mad bum, like you said. You don't have a Corey Kluber. You don't have that guy that needs the ball every fifth day, no matter what. This is our ace. We're going to give him the ball. So you don't risk taking innings away from that type of rotation arm. You know, Garrett Richards has been viewed as a guy with ace potential for the longest time for the Angels, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Same thing with Tyler Skaggs, not as high of a potential, but a guy that they've seen as a number two or three type piece in a major league rotation. I could go on and on about the injuries most recently to this rotation. Andrew Heaney, Nick Tropiano should be coming back from the disabled list here soon. Matt Shoemaker still on the disabled list, waiting to finish up his throwing program. So the way this has worked out, I think, was the perfect situation for Shohei Ohtani, because the Angels can be flexible with his schedule and accommodate him early on and see how he deals with it. And so far, the results have been promising. Yeah, you mentioned the start where he got roughed up with Boston. And so that's going to happen, especially as he adjusts to life in the United States and still adjusting to this day. But it's nice because there's no fear of taking innings away from everybody else. All of these guys in the Angels rotation are coming off significant injuries and a very significant injury history. So you need to be cautious with everyone else's starts and everyone else's innings. And while that is sort of a blessing in disguise in terms of Shohei Ohtani, it is tough on Mike Socha and the rest of the front office in sort of managing those innings. I don't see it as a problem in the regular season. Maybe when you're talking playoffs, if the Angels do make it right now, they're certainly trending in the right direction. It's tough to project where Shohei Ohtani will be 4 or 5 months from now and if he can handle a bigger workload. Keep in mind, the dude is also just 23 years of age. So it's tough to say right now where he's going to be at once September and October roll around. But as I said in the beginning, there's already talks of him potentially moving up in his schedule and not being just a once-a-week guy pitching on the same day, which as of right now has been Sundays for the most part.
You mentioned Socha. He's a guy that took a lot of heat when Ohtani signed, saying, wow, here you have this Swiss Army knife, and you're going to have Mike Socha looked at as one of the more traditional managers in baseball and in charge of it. So how would you assess how Socha's handled Shohtani's, or I always call him Shohtani, Ohtani so far?
It's tough for me, man. I've always been a Mike Socha supporter. I love his, if you can craft a team in Mike Socha's sort of aggressive style, and I think Billy Epler has done a great job in sort of catering to that style for this season. We've seen it with Angels on the base paths being a little bit more aggressive, doing a little bit more hit and run, stolen bases, that types of thing. Those are the types of things that Mike Socha has become known for. And to be honest, it never was too big of a concern for me when Shohei Ohtani signed because of his relationship with the general manager, Billy Epler. And it has been night and day different from the previous relationship with Jerry DePoto as the general manager. Those two didn't see eye to eye. It made its way into the media. It was very well known that those two guys simply did not get along. And owner Artie Moreno is a big Mike Socha guy, so Jerry DePoto was the odd man out. He finds a guy in Billy Epler from the Yankees organization to come on over, and the two have, from everything that's been reported, and you can tell, just the feeling is different around the clubhouse, around the front office with these two, and that's ultimately paved the way. I think Mike Socha needs to be given credit for sort of, I don't say he's gone completely away from the traditional managing style that he became known for, especially when the Angels were winning multiple division titles in, you know, 06, 07, 08, 09, that era. But he's done well to adjust now in terms of matching up with his bullpen, which I know he still gets a lot of heat for, bringing guys in and out that some wouldn't get for. And I think we've gotten, as a lot of Angel fans have gotten nitpicky as far as pointing out Mike Socha's flaws, but this is a guy that's been around for a couple decades now, was there for the Angels' first World Series run in 2002. I have the utmost confidence that he's the guy to get it done, always viewed as a player's manager, and most importantly, the players love him. Mike Trout and Albert Pujols, Justin Upton, the veterans on this team, have nothing but good things to say about him. And when you have the veterans buy in to what the manager is preaching, and ultimately, and that comes down from the front office, it creates a magnificent clubhouse culture and just makes the game a hell of a lot more fun to play. And it's shown on the field with their hot start so far.
22-14, they're coming off a 6-2 stretch against Baltimore, Seattle, and Colorado. But as I'm looking through their schedule, I noticed that they were swept both by the Yankees and the Red Sox, and not that that's the worst thing in the world because those are the two best teams in baseball, but is this a team that is padding stats or padding wins against lesser competition, or are they the 22-14 team that the record says they are?
I think it's somewhere in between, maybe leaning towards the 22-14 team that the record says they are, because you got to think, man, both of those series, the Red Sox and the Yankee series, you were running into two very hot ball clubs. That Red Sox series, the Red Sox, I believe, going into the series were 14-2, best record in baseball, and obviously left 17-2 because they absolutely bludgeoned the Angels in all three games. And all three of those games kind of had the same start. I think the Angels' rotation was still finding its feet that early in the season, and now they seem to have turned the corner with the rotation. I believe six of the last eight outings for the Angels starting staff they've gone at least five innings scoreless. So they certainly seem to have turned a page from that series where you ran into a Red Sox team that I believe going in had won, you know, seven or eight games in a row. Same thing with the Yankees. And what gives me hope, or at least the optimistic side of things, teams that, or people that want to point out that, you know, they struggled against the Red Sox and Yankees, was coming off of a tough homestand, which included that Red Sox series. They got swept by the Red Sox, lost two out of three to a middling Giants squad, but then turn the corner, go into Houston at Minute Maid Park, and took two out of three games from the Houston Astros. And two of those games facing Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander, their upper echelon starters. So they fared well against the Astros on the road there, even bouncing back from a tough homestand, a tough 1-5 homestand. So they've proven that they can compete with the best. Yeah, it hasn't happened against the Red Sox and Yankees. Very small sample size. And quite frankly, if you're able to, you're supposed to beat up on the tiny competition. And there's a ton of it in the American League this season. So if you're able to, say, go 500 against the Red Sox, Yankees, Astros, and Indians, even though the Indians have struggled, those four look to be, you know, the best four teams in the American League thus far, and I think we all knew that going in. You go 500 in your matchups against them, and then you blow out the rest of the competition, you're going to finish with 90-plus wins and be in the playoffs when October rolls around.
Yeah, I think eight of their 14 losses are to the Red Sox, Yankees, Astros, or Indians. So, and Seattle and Colorado aren't bad teams either. So those are good wins to get there. Let's look around their roster a little bit here. And two guys that they brought in the offseason in Zach Cozart, Ian Kinsler. For infield stuff, there were talks about whether or not they'd go get somebody like Mike Moustakas. Instead, moved quickly on Cozart and then made that trade for Kinsler. Kinsler, I just noticed they moved out of the leadoff spot, has been struggling. Cozart had a good game today. How would you evaluate those two additions compared to what other options were out there this offseason?
Well, I know the Angels got a little bit of flack when, you know, we went on through the offseason and Mike Moustakas had yet to be signed and ultimately signs what's viewed upon as a cheap one-year deal to go back to the Kansas City Royals, sort of a prove-it deal for him. And there were a lot of Angel fans that were up in arms about it, like, man, we could have had Mike Moustakas at this price and this and that, whatever. But you got to think back. At the time when the Angels acquired Ian Kinsler in the trade and signed Zach Cozart, the landscape of the offseason and the free agent market was completely different. At that time, Mike Moustakas is asking for, I believe, somewhere in the realm of a 4 or 5 year deal, anywhere from 80 to 100 million was reported. And for that price, I completely scoffed at Mike Moustakas. And I, to be honest, I never saw Moustakas as a fit for what Billy Epler was trying to do with this Angels roster. He's a guy that values a high on-base percentage. He loves his guys, everyday guys, to be 330 and above in that category. And Mike Moustakas has a career on-base percentage at 306. Yeah, the power numbers have certainly been there, but a guy that's also, by a few metrics, has been valued less athletically than Albert Pujols, if you can even believe that. So a guy that I never saw as a true fit. And the Zach Cozart deal is a great one. 3 years, $38 million, very affordable. Ian Kinsler, a one-year deal, sort of a stopgap solution to a long-term problem, which has been second base for the Angels. I know there's rumor that Zach Cozart might be the second baseman of the future, so the Angels can maybe dabble in the third base free agent market this offseason with Manny Machado and Josh Donaldson, but we're a long ways away from anything like that. In terms of the production this season, it's certainly been disappointing, especially when talking about Ian Kinsler. I talked about him earlier on Locked On Angels this week, and now, of course, day game Wednesday in Colorado, he's moved from the leadoff spot for the first time this season when he's been healthy down all the way to the number six hole. As you mentioned, Zach Cozart takes his place and has a good game, hits a dinger, has a couple of base hits, a couple of runs scored. But even Zach Cozart was in a tough spot offensively for a good stretch there. There's a lot of guys, despite the production that they've gotten from Mike Trout and Andrelton Simmons, that have struggled quite a bit. Now, Ian Kinsler, I see that maybe with age catching up to him. The dude, I think, is in his 36, 37 age season. So that's certainly a concern, especially after a down 2017. And the Angels don't really have any other solution to that second base spot, aside from maybe moving Zach Cozart to second should Kinsler struggle some more, and maybe moving a guy like Luis Valbuena and Jeffrey Marte to get more consistent at-bats in the lineup over at third base. So the Angels need Ian Kinsler to produce, plain and simple. When this lineup is at their best, you have Ian Kinsler in the leadoff role. There's no one that can replicate what he brings to the table. A guy that sets the tone for the rest of the lineup, grinds out at-bats, draws a ton of walks, gets on base, especially because Mike Scioscia wants to keep Mike Trout in the number two hole. I also talked about earlier this week about, you know, maybe you slide Mike Trout in the leadoff role, similar to what the Nationals have done with Bryce Harper. It's a little bit different circumstance in that teams were simply just pitching around Bryce Harper because the rest of the offense was struggling largely. And despite the struggles of Kinsler and Cozart, the offense hasn't really missed a beat, even over this past week. As you mentioned, they went 6-2, averaging about 6 runs a ball game in that stretch, despite those struggles of Kinsler. So as of right now, I'm not too worried, even though Mike Moustakas has been producing at a very high level so far, despite the Royals looking like an absolute dumpster fire as of right now. But I expect Zach Cozart to turn things around. Same thing with Ian Kinsler at the plate, at least to a 2-war level that Ian Kinsler was at last season. I think you'll take that as an Angel fan. And not to be forgotten, Billy Epler loves defense and guys that play phenomenally on that side of the field, and Zach Cozart and Ian Kinsler cannot be argued are some of the best defenders in the game, and that has been evident so far this season.
And another defense first guy, gold glove caliber and Cole Calhoun in the outfield, however really struggling offensively. I've seen you've mentioning Jabari Blash getting some playing time out there. Calhoun owed $8.5 million this year, $10.5 million next year, and then according to Spotrac, looks like he has a club option for the year after that. So they've got some money tied into him. He's not producing offensively. What can they do with Calhoun?
This is a tough one, man. I mean, the Angels went from what was a perceived black hole for the past couple years into this offseason, that being left field. Now, you fill that with Justin Upton, but seems as if right field has turned into that new black hole. Cole Calhoun off to a very slow start this year, a batting average at 167, an OPS plus at just 12, which I was reading earlier today how many major league outfielders in baseball history have had an OPS plus of 13 or less. It is a very short list. And the concerning thing for Cole Calhoun is that this doesn't seem to be a problem that he's having just this season. He had hernia surgery in the offseason ahead of the 2017 season and struggled for a large portion of that season as well. It's a career low year for him, and now it looks like 2018 is going to be a new astronomical low. Cole Calhoun, in his last 151 ball games, so roughly a full season there, 629 plate appearances, is hitting just .228 with a .312 on-base percentage, an OPS of just 670. That is not going to get it done, even with the great gold glove caliber defense that he's played, as you alluded to. The tough thing for the Angels is, though, if he struggles, and you mentioned the money tied to him, where do you turn? You know, they've gone a little bit more often to Chris Young, especially when facing left-handers, but Chris Young hasn't produced all that much, hitting just .167, a couple dingers, including one in Seattle, but he's certainly not a guy that you want taking consistent at-bats every single day. They're trying out Jabari Blash. He started out the last 3 games, even what I thought was surprising, the first game in that Colorado series, the 2-game set with John Gray on the mound, a righty. That's normally a spot where you would see Cole Calhoun in the lineup, especially after having 2 days off previously. He didn't play the previous 2 games, and it was Jabari Blash in the lineup. So I think right now, as it looks like, the Angels are going to try out Jabari Blash. Hopefully he can replicate the absurd numbers that he put up in AAA to start the year. He was hitting about .337 with 10 home runs in AAA Salt Lake, hence the call-up. But so far, I think he's hitting 2-for-9 in 3 games, so jury's still out on Jabari Blash, a guy that has struggled at the major league level in years past. That's why the Angels were able to scoop him up on a minor league deal this offseason. But other than that, the long-term outlook for the position, it's going to be tough if Cole Calhoun doesn't produce, because while the Angels do have some talent in the outfield in the minor league system, a lot of those guys are a little too far away to project anytime soon. The closest guy that would factor in to the major leagues that's an upper-level prospect in their system is Jahmai Jones, and he, at the start of the season, was switched over to second base because that was seen as his easiest way to the majors, because you have Cole Calhoun, you have Justin Upton, and you have Mike Trout signed long-term. So this is a problem that the Angels are going to have to address if Cole Calhoun doesn't turn it around this season and find a better solution in the offseason, because if Cole Calhoun struggles this year, you might have to just dump him after the season, trade him away, even though his value is at an all-time low, no doubt. But at the same time, Cole Calhoun has now shown a season's worth of data that we have, and he is not even close to the same hitter at the plate. So it's a problem.
With Albert Pujols getting his 3,000th hit, there was a lot of national attention on him, on his contract, on his overall production or lack thereof. When you're going for a milestone like 3,000, it's easy to say and easy to be happy for Pujols and all that. But in general, what is the feeling? What feeling do Angels fans have toward Albert Pujols?
It's tough because, you know, ever since there was a lot of fanfare when Albert Pujols first signed with the Angels back in 2012, no doubt. I was one of the lucky few that got to be at the press conference, and a lot of fanfare and excitement surrounding that. But, I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. He hasn't been anywhere close to the player that he was for St. Louis. Now, even with that, he has still been a guy that has averaged right around 27, 28 home runs and right around 100 RBIs. Yes, those are old-school statistics, and we have so much new information about the game. And in evaluating Albert Pujols, we know that he is, at best, a replacement-level player at this point. But at the same time, the contribution that he has to the clubhouse can't be denied, especially in grooming Mike Trout along his career. It's sort of a nice piece for Albert Pujols to more or less kind of, you know, pass the torch over to Mike Trout as the new face of baseball. But as far as the perception of Angel fans, you know, I don't run into too many Angel fans that absolutely despise Albert Pujols. Angel fans as a whole, I think you would see and say that they very much like Albert Pujols, even though he hasn't been what they would have hoped when signing that massive 10-year contract. But at the same time, it hasn't been too much of a problem. And we'll see if it is later in the year or next season, if you will, because if this team's contending and, say, Albert Pujols isn't producing, then you might have a real issue on your hands as far as Mike Scioscia having to hit him further down in the lineup. He's been penciled in the cleanup spot all season long. As of right now, still getting it done, hitting above 250, leaving the yard every now and again, and producing with runners in scoring position. But as far as how Angel fans view him, I mean, he's still the second most popular jersey that you see around the stadium, right behind Mike Trout. Definitely still a fan favorite, and maybe a lot of nostalgia has to do with who he was a decade or so again with the Cardinals. But at the same time, again, Albert Pujols, big-time veteran presence in the clubhouse. If he can continue to produce at a 250 average and right around 100 RBIs, I think the Angels are going to be content with that. Fans are going to be content with that. Is he going to have his jersey retired by the Angels? Probably not. There might be a case to be made given how many milestones he's reached and still could in an Angels uniform. But the consensus is generally positive around Albert Pujols, even though the production isn't at an all-star caliber level.
I want to get to Mike Trout, but first, let's look at the pitching staff. And between the rotation and the bullpen, what do you think is the biggest concern for this season? And I think when we say rotation, we usually mean with the Angels, their health, because if everybody's healthy, I think it's hard to argue that the rotation isn't good enough to win games. I think that it is, but the problem's been staying healthy. And then the bullpen, I think you have, from, I guess, my national perspective, you have some guys that are unproven, but some talented arms. And then with, you know, Middleton coming into the closer role, and he'll be back this week. But I guess what's the bigger concern between those two things moving forward?
I think, even with the injury history and concerns surrounding the rotation, I think it's the bullpen, quite frankly, because you have a lot of unproven arms there, and a lot of guys that the Angels leaned on as early as last season that simply haven't produced so far this season and don't look like they're going to at least factor into primary roles into the bullpen, specifically looking at Cam Bedrosian and Blake Parker. They simply haven't gotten it done in high-leverage, high-stress situations so far this season. And these were two guys that were counted on to be the eighth and ninth inning guys going into the season. Now Keenan Middleton has sort of taken over the closer role. He should be coming off the disabled list this weekend to get ready for the homestand in Anaheim. And he's been by far, I shouldn't say by far, the best arm in the bullpen, because Jose Alvarez, their one lefty, has been phenomenal in coming out of the bullpen in very sticky situations and getting out of the jam. He's given up just two earned runs in over 16 innings now. But outside of those two, I mean, you're talking about Jim Johnson throwing a ton of high-stress, high-leverage innings, and whether or not he can get it done as the season wars on remains to be seen. He's coming off two dreadful seasons with the Atlanta Braves, and he's been okay for right now, an ERA at 3.79. But Blake Parker, Cam Bedrosian struggling in tough situations. The one guy that has been a revelation in the bullpen has been Justin Anderson, a guy that was called up in that Houston Astros series I mentioned, has had one bad outing coming out of the bullpen, but other than that, six different appearances, has been absolutely lights out. Dude hits 97-plus on the radar gun with his fastball and has a absolutely devastating slider in the high 80s. So that two-pitch combo has served him well. But again, an unproven arm, a guy that was a 14th-round draft pick, and this is his first major league go-round. So tough to say what he has moving forward. There's a lot of what-ifs in the bullpen, and I think the starting rotation is starting to solidify themselves. As I mentioned, six of the last eight starts for the rotation as a whole, guys have gone five scoreless innings. So Tyler Skaggs, Garrett Richards, and Shohei Ohtani have sort of established themselves as the top three in this rotation. Richards, especially, his last couple of starts have been very promising. Andrew Heaney, guy that started the year on the disabled list, has switched over from pitching on the third base side of the rubber to the first base side. And his last three starts doing so have been phenomenal as well. Jamie Barria, just a 21-year-old right-hander, making his major league debut this season. He has given them some quality innings, especially in his most recent start against the Rockies. And Nick Tropiano coming off the disabled list. I still am a little bit on the edge of my seat anytime any of these guys pitch, because I know that things could crumble in a heartbeat with this rotation. But as of right now, for the most part, you're sending out five or six healthy guys. If another rotation arm or two go down and have to have trips to the disabled list, then, yeah, things get a little bit hairy, because the only guy that really has any major league experience that is in the depths of the Angels organization is Parker Bridwell, and his one start in the majors this season, he got absolutely shelled by the Oakland A's. So depth is certainly a concern with the rotation, but if you're asking me which one gives me more cause for concern, it's certainly the bullpen, given how much unpredictability there is in there on a nightly basis.
All right, main event time for this interview, and that is Mike Trout, who I know you've noticed, and I've certainly noticed, but it's crazy how many players in the last couple weeks are as good as Mike Trout or better.
It's absurd.
So, not counting, I don't want to go that route, because everybody's trying to find out who's going to be better than him. What national narrative, besides this player is as good as Mike Trout, what national narrative do you, speaking for the Angels crowd, drives you most crazy when it comes to Mike Trout?
It's the incessant comparisons that you mentioned. You know, I think we're in this day and age where we constantly want the next big thing. We're never content to truly appreciate what we have in the here and now. And pretty much, I think what you're alluding to is the whole thing that Angel fans are waiting for is, you know, oh, we got to contend this year. We got to become World Series contenders because Mike Trout's contract is going to be up in 3 years. And, you know, the national narrative has been that he's going to go somewhere on the East Coast. And I get the argument to an extent because he's an East Coast guy. He's a big family guy that's been well noted. The dude pretty much holes up in New Jersey in the offseason and only comes out to attend Philadelphia Eagles games. That just seems what he does. Even accepting MVP awards or any award shows in the offseason, he's doing interviews from his house. So I get the connection there. It's so hard to project what the man's going to do because so few are in his inner circle. You know, it's not like different things are coming out in the rumor mill like, oh, Mike Trout would love to play for the Philadelphia Phillies. Mike Trout would love to play for the New York Yankees. I think sometimes the East Coast thing is that, you know, any big-time free agent just automatically wants to go and play for New York or play for Boston, what have you. But that's the one that drives me nuts, man. I feel sometimes Angel fans get a little nervous because that that free agency is looming a few years around the corner that we got to contend right now. Otherwise, the dude is going to bolt. But let's just appreciate him for what we got right now. You still have him for three more seasons. The team this season looks like they're going to be a playoff contender, especially with the hot start they've gotten out to. And it looks as if Mike Trout is getting even better, which is almost impossible to fathom given where he's been the last 5 years.
Take me into the local view, because nationally, when we think of Mike Trout, one of the things, I mean, besides being the best player in baseball, one of the things is, oh, MLB doesn't market him enough. He's not in enough commercials. He's not doing enough of this. Locally, there's the Dodgers. And so you're in the second city, that he doesn't get enough attention. I feel like that's what a lot of the national narrative is. Take me into the view locally. What do fans feel like he's not getting the attention that he deserves? Do they not care about it? I mean, I feel like if I was an Angels fan, and maybe this would be different if I was in that situation, but does that stuff scare Angels fans when they hear people saying he's not getting enough attention in that market?
I don't think so, because this guy isn't a big personality. As I mentioned, Mike Trout is a very down-to-earth, you know, family-type guy, very close inner circle. He's not a guy that wants the spotlight. I've heard countless times from people around him and guys I've brought on the show is that this guy doesn't want to be seen as sort of this major personality, this superstar, if you will. Mike Trout wants to be one of the guys. He wants to be a good teammate above anything else. And that's what sometimes, you know, drives me a little up a wall in that, like, oh, he's not marketed enough. He's not out there enough. Trust me, if Mike Trout wanted to be, he could easily do so because his play on the field backs it up. But he doesn't want to be all of those things. He just wants to be the guy. If he's known as the best player in baseball, that's fine with him. He wants to be known as a great teammate first and foremost. And that's the general consensus among Angels fans is that. We're very happy, obviously, with having Mike Trout on the squad. And to have this sort of person be the face of your franchise, a guy that has done nothing wrong in his career, it seems, and I'm talking more so off the field, a guy that is truly a role model for the young generation and how they should go about their business. You know, there truly isn't a bad thing that you can say about Mike Trout, it seems. And I think a lot of times we want him to be this sort of larger-than-life type figure, but he's just not, and that's what I think Angel fans love even more so about him. He's the perfect guy for the laid-back Southern California, Orange County type, because let's remember, as much as Artie Moreno, the team's owner, wants the team to be in Los Angeles or associated with Los Angeles, you know, true Angel fans know that this is a team from Anaheim, from Orange County. It's a completely different vibe than the L.A. market and the Los Angeles Dodgers franchise. And Mike Trout fits that sort of laid-back vibe perfectly.
All right, I'll get you out of here with this. You have, or the Angels have, an 11-game homestand coming up with the Twins, Astros, and Rays. The Rays have been playing better as of late. The Astros are obviously the Astros, and then the Twins not playing well, but the talent is certainly there. What's your prediction for how they come out of this 11-game homestand?
I'm optimistic with the way the starting rotation has pitched as of late. The offense can go a little hot and cold sometimes, but they've been able to beat up on the Orioles and Mariners, and in the most recent game they had about the Rockies against the Rockies was promising. So things seem to be clicking again, but a big albatross for the Angels this season has been playing at home on the year. They are just 8-10 at Angel Stadium, against 14-4 on the road. That's the best road record in the American League. Now, granted, six of those losses were against the Yankees and Red Sox that we talked about heavily here. So I expect them to come out somewhere in the 7-4 range in this 11-game homestand. I think the expectation is that you take 3 out of 4 from the Twins, given the level of play that they've been at so far in 2018. They don't look as if they're fully clicking, not at least not to their 2017 selves. The Astros series, you know, can go easily either way. The Angels have shown that they can play with the Astros, taking 2 out of 3 in Houston back in April. You know, maybe you take 1 out of 3 there. It's tough to say. And Tampa Bay Rays, as you mentioned, playing some good ball as of late. It's going to be a tough series that I think you'd be okay if they split the series there, and you'd be happy if they get 3 out of 4. So I'm going to predict 7-4 in the homestand because the Angels are playing some good baseball going into this homestand. But I also wouldn't be shocked if it's somewhere around 6-5, 5-6, because for whatever reason they have struggled in the friendly confines of Angel Stadium.
All right, well, Pat, give yourself a plug. Tell the listeners where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me. Most importantly, follow the show. That's where I give all the updates and tweet along the games. That Twitter handle is at LockedOnAngels. And if you want to follow my personal Twitter, that'd be awesome, too, at OtherPatZajac. A little ode to Wheel of Fortune there.
All right, well, I appreciate your time, and keep up the good work.
All right, thanks, Tommy. Take it easy.
See ya.